on the topic of faith over fear. We have asked Grace and Sean to speak. I would like to introduce our first speaker, Grace G.
Hi, I'm an addict. My name's Grace.
Grace!
I'm one of the fill-in speakers. I got the call this morning, and I was like, don't answer the phone. Because I recognized the number that was calling me, the person. But I've always been taught since I came here when NA asked me to do something, and I can, to do it. And the young lady said, I know you really don't like doing this, but can you help us out? And I'm like, my favorite emoji is the throw-up face. I was like, that's what I'm getting ready to send you. And she's like, okay, but will you still come and do it? I'm like, yes, I will. So here I am. And this is a great topic for me because it just means so much to me spiritually and so much to me to stay here. So I was talking to my son. I always talk about my son when I speak at meetings because my son was raised in Narcotics Anonymous. He doesn't have that hole in my soul that I have. And I told him that I was coming here to talk on this topic. And he said, well, what are you going to say? And I said, well, I'm going to talk about when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't have any faith. And I really don't think I had any fear when I first came here because I wasn't really afraid of anything, you know, out there, because I would do anything, say anything, you know, trade anything, whatever it took to get one more. But when I came here, I started to understand what fear was about being in here because I didn't know if I wanted to be here. I was afraid of being here. I was afraid when they started talking about feelings. I was afraid to start talking about who I was, to start letting you see who I was, to say, I want to get high. You know, that was very scary for me when I came here because I came up with a family where you didn't talk about anything. You know, you shoved it under the rug. You didn't talk about it in the household. You didn't talk about it to each other. You didn't talk about if your feelings got hurt or anything like that. And for me, I didn't get clean for myself. I got clean for my son. So that thing that they say that you have to be here for you, that's not my story. I came in here because I wanted a better life for my kid. And I got that and so much more. So, you know, when I first came here, even though I knew some people that were here before me, I was really wondering, like, where they were. They kind of, like, disappeared. And they were like, you know, stay back when I first came in because they didn't know if I was going to stay or not. They were taking bets on me because I was one of them people that did a lot of things wrong, you know, getting high in the meetings, fighting in the meetings, you know, all kind of insanity. And I thrived on that. You know, I used to say that I thrived on chaos and conflict. And that's not who I am. And the literature talks about a transformation of our spirit, you know, that we have to have that. So if I'm the same person that I was when I came in here, you know, I mean, I need to check myself. Somebody needs to check me, right? But I'm not that person. And it's so crazy because people still judge me by what I did 20 years ago, you know. Well, you got to know me now. You know, you got to get to know me now. And I don't let a whole lot of people know me, right? Because part of my fear today is that, so the fear thing started to go away and I started to develop faith in Narcotics Anonymous because I saw other people staying clean, you know, and starting to talk about those things that were so hard for me to talk about. They started talking about what happened in their families. You know, and I got clean a long time ago. I started coming to meetings in 1988, maybe 1987. I actually didn't get clean until 88. So back then, you know, we talked about the core stuff. We talked about all the stuff that got me in here, you know. And I don't hear too much of that anymore because especially now when I raise my hand and say I want to get high, people are like, oh. And I'm like, this is where you're supposed to share that at, you know. So it shocks me that people are like, you know, I think the longer, and this is just for me, the longer we stay here, people with a lot of clean time, you get that mark on your back, you know, that they think maybe we're God. I don't know, but we're not. We're just like you. We just have been clean longer and have some more experience. So anyway, I started to believe in you. I started to believe in Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't really buy into the whole HP thing yet. The higher power thing, I was like, don't talk to me about that. That just wasn't, you know, what I wanted to believe. It's not something that I wanted to look into. And it did. And my sponsor kept saying, it doesn't talk about that in the first step. It doesn't talk about that in the second step, right? So just take your time with the steps, you know, and talk to other people about what their belief system is. You know, so my introduction to having a power greater than myself were the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, the people in Narcotics Anonymous that were staying clean and telling the truth, my sponsor, my network, you know, and then I allowed my network to get too big and I realized that we're human beings here and we all fall short, and I got my feelings hurt a lot, right, because I didn't know how to establish boundaries and I trusted people that didn't deserve my trust. And, you know, I got my feelings hurt. And then I wanted to leave Narcotics Anonymous because of you. You know, and early on, my sponsor taught me a very valuable lesson. And that was when I start saying, you people, I'm in trouble. Right? And I still believe that. Or, you know, or those meetings or those people, you know, I know that I'm on my way out the door. And thank you, God and Narcotics Anonymous. I've never found it necessary to leave here. And sometimes it's been hard. You know what my sponsor said? Sit on your hands and don't leave the meeting. And that's what I did. I've had, say, 5 sponsors in the time that I've been here. And all of them have taught me so many wonderful things. And I'm so glad that all of them are still clean. And I think that that's a miracle in itself, you know, and a testimony to my faith in them and their mentorship of me. You know, and all the times that in these people sponsored me, I needed all of them for different reasons. And it's so funny now because it's like I have these 5 voices in my head from my sponsors. When something happens, you know, like if I learn something from one of them, I'll hear their voice telling me that. And it used to only be my diseased voice, you know, or my critical parent voice that would say, you're not good enough, you're not this enough, you're never going to get this enough. Because when the fear and the faith are in there fighting for me, right, in the beginning, that voice was stronger. That voice that told me that I wasn't welcome, I wasn't enough. I wasn't a child that deserved recovery. I wasn't loved. You know, all of those messages. And I never heard all the messages that we give in Narcotics Anonymous until I got here. I didn't hear that from my family. And the really crazy thing is once I got it and I took it to my family, I would walk into a family event and they would all stand up because they knew I was going to hug them all. And then when I would leave, they would all stand up because they knew I was going to hug them goodbye, but they never hugged each other. You know, it was just so bizarre, right? But eventually, by staying here, they started to do that. You know, they started to love, be able to show that to each other. You know, and the person that sponsored me my first 5 years just walked in, and I was sponsored by a man my first 5 years of recovery, and that's just what I needed. And if you don't like that, maybe you have a sponsor that you can talk to, because I don't want to hear it. You know, because, and I always tell people, you know, this is my program, right? I'm not telling you what you have to do. I used to think that I could tell you all that, but I've learned that I can't. You know, the longer I stay here, the less I know, and I do really believe that, you know. But I also tell people when they try to tell me something that I've done wrong, that I haven't given them permission to take my inventory. I used to cuss a whole lot. I try to watch my mouth now because I don't want to be that person. I have 2 grandchildren, and it just doesn't, it's not a becoming look if one of my grandkids are walking around saying cuss words. And also, that's not who I am now. That doesn't mean I don't cuss. I do, but I try to, like, you know, that, hush it. So anyway, I tell people when they tell me, because I've been clean 38 years, thank you, God, in Narcotics Anonymous, I'm super proud of that. I'm like, B-I-T-C-H, get 38 years and then come talk to me, right? Unless I gave you permission to take my inventory, then you can come and talk to me, right? Because I need people to tell me the truth about myself. You know, don't love me to death, love me to life. You know, but tell me the truth in a way that I can hear it, that I can, you know, accept it. And then tell me the solution. Help me find the solution. If I don't know it, help me find it. You know, and sometimes the solution is just not to use. And go to another meeting, you know, and raise my hand and share that I'm struggling. You know, and just because I've been clean a long time doesn't mean that I don't struggle. You know, I have a sponsor that's real stickler about the steps and traditions. And we're actually getting ready to start a tradition study. She lives in a different state. And so I do step work with her on FaceTime. And like the first time I started doing step work with her, she was like, turn your book around and let me see it. I'm like, what? And I had a lot of clean time. She's like, turn your book around, let me see it. And I'm like, why? She said, because I want to see the writing. And I was like, oh, that would have been good, right? If I just was like ad-libbing it, right? But I didn't, right? Because I didn't think about that. Or I probably might have. So I had to turn my book around and show her that I actually had stuff written. So in this tradition study, that's what we're going to do. You know, you're not allowed to talk on the meeting unless you got something on the paper. You know, you got to show us the paper. Because if you want what we have, you got to do the work. You know, and I learned that real early on. My very first convention, there were like 20 of us in one room stepping over each other when we were sleeping. Remember that, David? So insane. My first experience with caffeine overdose, because I didn't drink coffee until I got clean. And one of the things that I was taught at that convention was, if you want what we have, then do what we do. And David said, "If watch the people that stand up with clean time." And that was, what, 1990 maybe, or 89? And he said, the people that stand up that have a significant amount of clean time, and back then, if you had a couple years clean, that was a significant amount of clean time. They're going to have a couple things in common. They're going to have a guide. They're going to have step work. They're going to have a sponsor. And they're going to have a service commitment. So get involved. You know, and that's been my motto. That's why I'm still here, because I still do all of those things. I still believe in those things. I still believe in this. So back to the faith over fear. Many times fear wanted to run my life and run me out of these meetings, have me doing things that I didn't want to do. But my belief in the sponsorship part of this program, that has always allowed me to be very honest with my sponsors and the process of the steps in keeping my side of the street clean. And I've made a lot of mistakes around here, but one of the things that helped me with my faith was remaining humble when I made those mistakes, talking to those people face to face, saying those words that I hated saying when I first came in here, and still hate, I'm sorry. I still don't like those words. I try to not to do things that I'm going to have to say those words, but then amending the behavior so that I can continue to spiritually grow. Because if I'm still doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results, am I really transforming my character? You know, or having that transformation of my spirit? Because it talks about it in the steps, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. If I haven't had that, I'm not doing something in the step work. And I'm getting ready to probably hurt somebody's feelings by my next thing. And again, I hope you have a sponsor to talk to. But when people, listen, relapse is not part of my story. I picked up illegal key tags and used, and picked up key tags and used, but I didn't get clean and then use and come back. But I know a lot of people have. And welcome back, right? If that's you, and I'm glad you're here. However, my understanding of that now is when they come back and they say, I still have the knowledge, you know, what my sponsor has helped me to understand is that something was missing. They missed something in the set work if they thought using was an option. And, you know, so I don't know how that those two things make sense. I have the knowledge, but you used. Like, it just doesn't, you know. And that's what my sponsor helps me to do, is to look at those things. And then where is my faith that I can get through anything with God and Narcotics Anonymous? So, been here a long time. 2018, I had a heart attack. I was away on my motorcycle. And when I came back to Maryland, and something happened inside of me. And something happened, you know, on the peripheral outside of my life that caused me to really feel uncomfortable in here. I didn't want to be here anymore. And three people that I really respect in Narcotics Anonymous, I went to all three of those people because, you know, quack, quack, the duck story. If you don't know about that, I'll tell you the duck story after the meeting. But they all said the same thing, right? So I was walking like a duck. And they all said to me, where is 10, 11, and 12? Where's your 10, 11, and 12 at? You better be working on your spiritual program. And they gave me some suggestions of how to improve my spiritual program. And I have always been open-minded enough and willing to listen to people that have come before me and that have been through things and that are still here. So I did what they suggested, you know. I allowed my program to grow in a more spiritual way, which is when I started to try to not cuss, watch my mouth. Is somebody watching the time thing? Okay, thank you. So, because I don't like that either. When the first speaker goes, and you're the second speaker, and the first speaker's up here, just on and on and on, and the guy's going, yeah, okay. So, all three of those people gave me the same suggestions, and that's what I did. So I went to this other place, and I still go to that other place, and I found something that changed me from the inside. That continued to change me from the inside. And I don't know how to explain it, and I don't know how to give it away. I can probably talk to you about it, but it has enhanced who I am as a person. It has made the light and the love that I have inside of me shine brighter and to be a more softer, loving person. And when I first experienced this transformation of my spirit, I would come to meetings, people would go, "What happened to you? Did you have a facelift?" And I'm like, "No." They're like, "Did you lose weight? Did you change your hair? Like, something happened." And I'm like, "It's God." And they're like, "What?" I'm like, "It's my higher power." And they're like, "What do you mean?" I said, "I'm working on my spiritual fitness." And they're like, "How do you do that?" And as a result of that, some people started to get weeded out of my life. And some people started to get weeded into my life. And it's like just a big... a big, awesome, wonderful thing to experience for me, you know, and my hope is that it continues to grow, because I see it growing here, you know. I see it growing more in Narcotics Anonymous. I see people's, it's almost like I feel like the Grinch, you know, how he talks about his heart, right? And his heart's real little at first, and it looks like, you know, like a prune, and then at the end, he's like, you know, his heart's growing bigger, and he's on the sled with the dog and all that, right? My heart grew 10 times, and that's like the only way that I could explain it, you know? And as a result of that experience, it changed how I look at those people that I thought really betrayed me and hurt me and all the other negative part of this of the triangle. Because if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be me. I wouldn't have sought those things to improve my spiritual fitness. You know, and that's what it's about. If they would have told me that when I came here, I would have probably ran, because it would have probably really scared me, right? Because I didn't know if I wanted that. And a lot of things around here still scare me. The fear part. But it's like, you know, and that the old saying, you know, fear and faith can't live in the same house. I don't believe that. Because I do things when I'm afraid to do things. You know, because that's what Narcotics Anonymous told me to do. You know, keep showing up. Keep showing up for myself. And when I can't show up for myself, show up for somebody else. You know, one of my dear friends just celebrated 34 years. And she's had a horrific year of coming through some things that she's experienced. And you know how she got through it? She helped other people. Because she had the same kind of sponsors that I had. Because, you know, that's what they say. If you can't, you know, that's how I give it away. That's how I keep it. When I'm afraid that I'm losing it, I need to get another sponsor. Get another sponsee. I need to, you know, get more involved in service. I need to do something for a newcomer that I meet at a meeting. Pick them up, take them to a meeting. Pick her up, take her to a meeting. Buy her a cup of coffee. All these people, you know, a lot of people did all of those things for me. Because I was very poor and very broken when I came in here with a child, you know, and Narcotics Anonymous changed my life, you know, and continues to change my life. Now, I don't know what happens to people when they leave. I don't want to be one of them people, which is why when I get the call that says, "Hey, our speaker canceled," right, I'm like, "All right, I'll come out," right? So am I close? Okay. So I have 5 minutes. I'm going to tell you about something really cool I'm getting ready to do. I've traveled a lot in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, people taught me how to save my money in here, and I've been really blessed in that regard, like investing my money and making my money work for me and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, and what I've done is I've traveled a lot with a bunch of people all over the world, but I've never been like to Europe and all these kind of things. And my sponsor, who's like a nomad, travels everywhere now because she's retired. She's going to London on April the 8th. She's going on the 7th. And I'm going on April the 8th. This is my first time going to London, right? And Rick's going too. But Rick always goes, so it's not new for him. But it is new for me. I'm going to London for the London Convention. It's so exciting, right? And then I get to speak at an actual regular London meeting. You know, I mean, who? You could have never told me that sitting on a bar stool, right? I thought about doing those things, but I would never have experienced those things, you know? And for a long time, in Narcotics Anonymous, we used to all go to Denny's after the meetings, and we would be sitting around drinking coffee and doing the same things at the bar stools, talking about each other, you know? And then my sponsor said, what are you doing? Are you passing on your disease, or are you passing on your recovery? You living in fear? You're living in faith. Oh, I got the 5 minutes on. And I'm getting ready to retire, right? So when I came here, I was 28 years old, was a baby, and it was about, you know, gathering stuff, giving my son a stable home and, you know, making sure that, you know, getting a car and a good job and things like that. And then I got to stay clean. I got older. Don't like that word. And then I started, you know, getting rid of stuff. Downsizing, and then I sold all my houses. My son had an in-law suite built at his house. That's where I live at now. And now it's like I'm getting ready to retire. I'm really scared to do it. Let me say that too, fear, because I've worked since I was 14 probably. But I know a lot of other people that have retired, and they're like, girl, just do it. You're going to be fine, right? And I think I'm going to be fine. And if not, I can just go work somewhere else, right? So how exciting is that? Right? I would have never, my parents never could retire. You know, my grandparents didn't retire because that's, you know, wasn't something that happened in poor families. You know, and that's because Narcotics Anonymous gave me the ability to stick and stay and grow up. So I don't call myself a senior citizen because I hate that, right? I'm a queenager because that just sounds so much better, doesn't it, right? So thank you. I like that too, queenager. You can use it. However, man, growing up here, maturing here, wow. You know, how do you give it back? How do I give it back? When I look at my son and I look at my grandchildren and he doesn't have that hole in his soul, how I give it back is I stay. And I keep coming back, right? So I hope you do too. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you.
Alright, this is a workshop speaker meeting on the topic of faith over fear. And we've asked Grace and Sean to speak, so now I'd like to introduce you to our second speaker, Sean.
Good evening, family. I'm an addict and my name is Sean. I don't like this whole microphone thing here. I would feel much better being able to walk around the room and talk. One of my least favorite things in Narcotics Anonymous is standing in front of a room full of people and sharing on a topic. It's a lot easier for me just to do my story because I know my story and it's my story, but when I'm given a topic. But I didn't have just today. I was asked to do this about 2 months ago. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, I need to study. I need to start looking because I am not the type of person that can quote literature. I'm not the type of person that can tell you what page to go look on it. I intentionally joined a literature home group because I'm not somebody who wants to pick up a book, and it has forced me to be able to get into the literature because there are numerous places in IPs, in the steps, that talk specifically about faith over fear. You know, and I'll try to touch on a couple of those, but like I said, you're not going to hear me quote any of this stuff because I'm not good at it. I grew up in a household where faith was going into a church and standing up and sitting down, and it was God was punishing, he was not loving. So when I first came into recovery, also in my 20s, you know, I was beaten, I was broken down, and I definitely did not want to look to a God. Definitely didn't want to look to the God that I had grown up with for any type of way to get out of the fear. Because I'm the type of addict who, when I'm using, I am walking around, I am looking at my feet, I have absolutely no backbone. You know, I'm looking for ways that thinking that you're going to get me, and I instead, at the same time, I'm thinking about which way I can get something from you and how I can find a way to con something out or steal it or just avoid this situation, because fear ran my life. You know, when I first came around, I did step work, I was involved, and I started to get some of that spiritual aspect of it. Through that process, I ended up meeting a woman, and it's funny, she called me one day and she said, "I need you to come talk to me right away." And I could hear she was crying, and I knew exactly what it was. But when I showed up, before she could even talk to me about it, I already had like a smile on my face, and she said, "I'm pregnant." And I said, "It's okay. This is going to be fine. Like, God put it on me to be the leader, to be somebody who that she could rely on and stand upon." And our marriage started off in the right way, and we seeked other people's advice and guidance, and the relationship, the marriage, was built on faith. But as life's struggles came, and we had two kids, and work struggles came, and I found myself often with my back against the wall, instead of reaching out to the fellowship, instead of reaching out to my sponsor, instead of reaching out to God, it became the punishment. You know, I grew up in a house with a mother who the glass was never half full. It was always half empty. It was always the pointing fingers, the "you did that" wrongs. So as I started to allow life, the outside, to push in on me, faith was not what I leaned on. Fear took over, and it's all I knew was to once again go back to looking at my feet, wondering how I'm going to make this go away, and the feeling was crippling. And in the end, the best way for me to figure out how to make that feeling go away was to put one more in me, because it numbed me. It took away that feeling, because then I no longer cared. I just didn't care. And then the next morning, I would wake up, and the fear would be right there again. You know, I was the fearful one who could not leave my house without getting high. I could not come back from lunch break without getting high. I could not go out and talk to people. I definitely was not going to be able to stand in front of a room full of people like this and carry on any type of conversation. So after a couple years of being married, having the kids, things looking kind of good on the outside, but feeling absolutely horrible inside, you know, my wife decided that she was going to leave, and thank God she did. I'm so glad she left. I would not have found my way back here if she hadn't. That was God doing something for me that I could not do for myself. And when she did, I found that my way back into the rooms. And I can tell you that the very first meeting that I went into, when they said, "Are there any newcomers in the room?" my hand went up, but it went up without my permission. I don't know how that happened, because I was not one who wanted to sit in that room and say, "I'm Sean and I'm an addict," but it happened. And from that point on, like, it was just one thing that led to another. A guy comes over and gives me a hug after a meeting. Another guy comes over and gives me a meeting schedule. Another guy says, "I'll meet you tomorrow night." And all of a sudden, like, that little light, that faith inside of me started to come back, you know. I felt like I was married to my wife before God, so the thought of my marriage not working was destroying that type of godly faith that I had come to understand. But there was a different type of faith that was being restored in me. It was a faith in the people around me. It was the faith in that first guy that I reluctantly went up to after a meeting and said, "Would you sponsor me?" And he didn't answer me right away. He said, "I want you to grab that sponsorship IP and let's get together this weekend." But he didn't say no. Mm-hmm. That faith of getting to sit down and break bread, and that he actually took me to a step study that we were doing. And this was, you know, we were coming, I'm from the Northwest area. He brought me down here to Baltimore area. I started to meet other people, and I started to become a little bit more comfortable in my skin. and he suggested that I get a service position, and somehow I got led to H&I, even though I've never been in a hospital, an institution, I've never been in really in a jail, I've never been in a rehab. That was not my story. But I went there, and I thought, okay, I can give this a try. And they said, well, how's your record? And it wasn't horrible. I had never really gotten caught for most of the stuff. I was a pretty good addict at being able to get away with my using, which made it worse. But I was able to get cleared to go into a detention center. Talk about fear. Like the fear of having to walk into a detention center when you had never been in a detention center, wondering these guys are going to be like gangsters. And walking in that door slamming behind me and thinking, what are you, what, God, what are you doing to me? Why am I being chosen for this? And it wasn't until I went to that meeting that night and then went to that meeting a few more times, and I would get to leave that meeting and that door would slam behind me on the way out, and the feeling that I would have, that I finally got to, you know, I would go into that meeting and at first the guys never wanted to speak. Everybody's, I didn't do it, it wasn't me. And I went in there and I shared honestly my story. And I would take in a piece of literature with me each time. And eventually I watched these guys start to open up. And I watched them like start to accept that somebody loved them. That there was some faith to be had. And the fear of going into that jail went away. The fear of going and speaking in with these guys in a small little 8x10 room left me. You know, it was to the point where with a handful of months clean, working for a shabby company that burnt me on my Friday paycheck, and I really wanted to get high. But I knew I couldn't get high until after I took the meeting into the detention center because I had to do it. It was like something I had to be there for. And by the time the meeting was over and I walked out, and it was just past this time of year, so it was still light out when I got out of there, and the sun was going down, and I no longer had that feeling to get high, that I knew that there was a God in my life again. And instead, I drove all the way from Westminster to Bel Air, Moravia, and hit a 10 o'clock meeting. And I got a little bit more of a shot of hope because I was definitely not a city boy. I'm a country boy, and I had to park like 5 blocks away and walk right down a dark alley to get there. And I felt okay with it. I no longer felt like I had to have anything to be afraid of. You know? And I continued to chase my recovery after that. That sponsor ended up moving away, but he helped direct me. It's funny. I was already thinking about making this move. Like something was telling me, you need to change sponsors, but I didn't know how to do it, and I didn't know how to have that, to walk through that fear. And he called me and he said, I'm moving to Arizona. And I was like, wow. And he said, but I've got somebody I think you should ask to be your sponsor. And when he said it, it was the exact person that I wanted to ask to be my sponsor anyway. You know, a God working in my life in such a way that I could not explain. You know, getting to spend some time with that sponsor, getting to spend some time within the runes, getting to do some of those first three steps, which really helped reintroduce me to a higher power. That wife that had left finally started to like the guy that she had left. She started to see the guy that she had known 8, 9, 10 years before that, and we decided to give this marriage thing another try, and we started to date again. You know, so it's not promised in Narcotics Anonymous that you're going to get your relationships back, that you're going to get any of the things back. That we didn't lose them, we threw them away. I put most of mine in a stem. But that when I allowed God to be the lead in my life, that miracles could still happen, and that faith took away that fear once again. You know, I thought that working steps 2 and 3 would be easier this time around because I already had some background in the past. No, it was quite the opposite. It was quite the opposite because I could not stay clean this time on my old recovery. Yes, I might have had that knowledge, but it had to go to a totally different level. And all of a sudden, writing on steps 2 and 3 really became in-depth to me. You know, that time of building that faith, because I was still very scared. You know, as I was sitting over there, from the time we walked in this room to the time I prayed with my sponsor, when I started headed over there, I could start feeling the shaking. It's uncontrollable. I can't stop it. You know, I can look at it as, oh my gosh, this is out of control, and it's a fear that I have no control over. I'm powerless over the fact that my hands started shaking, my body temperature went up. And instead, I have the option to go, you know what? God, what do you have in store? What is your plan for this? It might not even be anything with me. It could be with somebody in this room right now needs to hear something. And when I choose to get out of the way, it's the only part of that that I can do. I can choose to get out of the way and allow God in, or I can continue to stay in the way and allow that to affect me. Allow that to hold me down. You know, and going into work and knowing step four was approaching and that I was going to have to share things that I don't know that I had ever shared because I had never taken a step forward to that level before. And another member asked me one night, hey, let's go out to eat dinner. And we're just casually sitting there eating dinner. And he shared the same stuff with me that I was contemplating how I was going to share with my sponsor. He just said it like it was nothing while we were eating dinner. It was once again God reminding me that my faith could overweigh that fear. So that when it was time for me to share it, it was no longer something that was holding me down. And it was easy to just release and talk about that stuff. That stuff that had happened when I was, you know, a young person, when I was still an adolescent, to be able to get some of that stuff out. And that was just like amazing to me. You know, as I got into 6 and 7, you know, a lot of my character defects that I still wanted to hold on to were because I was using them as my assets. You know, when I was afraid, when I had fear, I would instead lash out. And I would do like the triangle of self-obsession talks about. And I would either have resentment towards you. If I had to deal with you, I would use anger to combat that. You know, that was definitely it. Because I didn't want you to see that I was afraid. So instead I would just act like I was really mad. And I would try to control you with my words and with my power. I would try to control you with the fact that I had control of the money. And using those defects was actually hurting the relationships of people that I really cared about, people that I really loved. And some of those people kind of knew where my faith stood, but I wasn't acting the same way that my faith was. They weren't aligning, and it wasn't sitting well with me. You know, so God continued to push on those areas of my life. And as they worked through, all of a sudden, a side of me, like Grace was mentioning, like something just started to come over me. And I started to look at my God aspect. And that stuff started to strip away. And all of a sudden, I wasn't afraid anymore to be a softer, gentler person. Now, I work in the masonry trade, so we are by nature, we are loud. We are screamers, we are yellers, you know, we are very physical, and I like to physically put my hands on people, and it's not the way the trade is anymore. It's not the same trade that I came up in where I didn't mind when somebody grabbed a hold of me and yoked me up. It's not that way anymore. And I wasn't getting the results that I wanted acting that way. But when I would, instead of talking and belittling somebody in a group setting, I pulled that guy aside and I went and talked to him in a quiet room, and I could talk just like this to him, and I could look him in the eye, the response I would get back was different. And I would start to fear the person who I was, the person who I had been, started to go away. And all of a sudden, I started really understanding what God had, what God wanted me to do. You know, I had the opportunity at a few years clean to go back into the trade that I loved and run large scale masonry jobs, which you have to deal with so much politics, construction politics, pulled into meetings. They try to pin you in the moment. When are you going to be done? What's the schedule? How fast can you do this? And I always felt like I had to give an answer right away, and I would get all worked up, and sometimes I would just get mad and I would storm out of the meeting. But instead, Narcotics Anonymous, through being a member of H&I, through eventually getting to become the chair of H&I in the Northwest area, realized that I can conduct business in a totally different way, because we can use the traditions and the concepts that we read before each subcommittee meeting, and I could apply them in my life, and I could realize that I can just pick up the phone and I can say, hey, you called me and said you can't make your commitment. Have you called any of the other people? Have you done any of the other steps that are required of you to take care of? And in the very end, if they couldn't do it, I would take care of it. And I started to do the same thing at work. You know, I would ask that somebody would come to me with a problem, and I would say, please don't bring a problem. Try to bring a solution next time. Where did that come from? That wasn't me. What are you talking about? You know, and we would talk about it. And instead, I would find myself instead of, oh my gosh, we have to hurry up and get this done, I'm going to take a minute and I'm going to walk you through this, and we're going to look at this for what it really is. And let's try to see if we can come to a solution ourselves. And once again, it allowed me to become a softer, gentler person. And it started to, God really started to like chisel away at that rough exterior so that I could feel like that I could trust Him in everything that I do. You know, right now I'm in a position where I need to start really looking at some of the people that I owe apologies to, that I have to start getting into some of that stuff, because I've had to go back to some of these guys at work the next day when they're out angry at me and they don't want to communicate with me, or when I go home and my wife, who I've just decided not to talk to because we argued the night before, and instead of just hoping that I can just ignore it long enough that the feeling goes away, because I can usually outlast them, to be able to walk through that and just say, you know what, I acted inappropriately, what I did was wrong, you know, accept my part for it. It's amazing, usually when I do that, they will right away accept their part for it too, and we can go right back to being friends, back to being co-workers, back to being a happy married couple, by just getting out of the way and allowing God into it, allowing my higher power to do what is so uncomfortable for me to do, you know. And that leads us into the last couple of steps of being able to continue to show up, continue to be of service, continue to help that newcomer that comes in the room, and you can see he doesn't want to raise his hand. You know, you might have talked to him outside the meeting, and it's his first time he's ever been in a meeting. And you see him looking at his toes, because that was exactly how I felt, and I can relate with it, and I can have empathy for it, because I never had empathy before in my life. And all of a sudden, it gives me the opportunity to be able to talk to somebody and encourage somebody and say, hey, why don't you meet me at this meeting? You know, a few years ago, I joined a motorcycle club it's not within Narcotics Anonymous, it is a motorcycle club that is of recovering addicts. And it allowed me to once again kind of break some of that stigma of that part of life. Like, I wanted to make sure that I was joining something that really involved a higher power, something that really was, I had a fear of being like an outlaw type of thing. I was afraid that was what it was going to be, and I didn't want it to be that. So I like went in with just putting my toes in a little bit and checking it out. And it ended up being a great opportunity for me to continue on with what I learned in Narcotics Anonymous and being able to meet new guys that are coming into there. And through that same riding a motorcycle, you know, I ended up getting bucked off of that motorcycle when a deer that I so loved to hunt during hunting season decided that it wanted to run right out the road from me and separate me from said motorcycle. And through that process, I had, you know, I'm laying in the stretcher. They had just rushed me to the hospital, and they were going to have to put the IV in. And all of a sudden, I was afraid again. But my sponsor was right there, and he said, it's okay. Yeah. It's okay. You can't do this without it. It's all right. And when he said that, all of a sudden the fear was gone. It was no longer crippling, you know, because when it went from my toes all the way up to my head, all I could remember was, oh, I remember you. But then I had my sponsor right there so that it wasn't able to. When I left out of there, they ended up having to send me home with some medicine. I never touched the medicine myself. My wife had it. She would administer that along with other things that are non-narcotic. And I said, I don't want to know what it is. When you're going to give it to me, just hand it to me. I put it in my mouth. No questions asked. And eventually one day she said, there's no more left. And I was able to continue on. You know, I was able to once again feel comfortable sharing in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, because I did not feel comfortable at all that time. I had a fear to share when I was under the influence by a doctor's orders. You know, but I continued to get through that. You know, I got back on that motorcycle because I had to get through that fear. I had to get back on that bike as quickly as I possibly could, because I love riding, because I love the time that I have out there on that bike. You know, I also spend a lot of time with my sponsor every year hunting. And sometimes you go out there and you don't get anything, and you can get frustrated, and you can get irritable, and you can get discontent. And I often have to remind myself, I often have to remind my sponsor, the reason we're out here is not to come home with something, is to be out there to watch that sun come up and watch God's miracle. To stand out there and all of a sudden, all that craziness that's going on, that committee in my head goes away. And I once again feel at peace. My faith is fully restored. And usually when that happens, it's the night that I go home with the biggest gift. So with that, thanks for letting me share. Thank you.